hand-drawn art of every single character in the game and just a little snippet of their backstory and what they were up to in the game for the state. And I still remember, like, I remember the specific, like, animations and poses of each of those characters. And I remember to this day, like, I don't know a lot about the wider Mortal Kombat lore, but I could tell you every single character who was in that game because of that. And I'm so, just like, what happened?
Because we're into the area
of... This is like
of...
an old man yelling at clouds thing, isn't it? Back in my day, games came with little books that gave you the story, you see?
And because we're complaining about old games that had booklets and how we are ourselves so old that these complaints are ridiculous, yeah, you're probably listening to the Big Bang Theory. Hi, or the Big Bang Theory Theory. Oh, God. Hi, I'm Nick.
And I'm Kyle.
And we watch the television show, The Big Bang Theory. Sorry, don't sue us. We didn't mean to do it. Ours has an extra theory in the title. We're okay. And, yeah, we watch every single episode every other week because we do want to preserve some part of our spirits in the television series, The Big Bang Theory. And today we'll be discussing Season 8, Episode 3, officially titled The First Pitch Insufficiency. But before we get to that, Kyle... When I was, like, 14, I got the Lunar Silver Star Story Complete Edition on the PS1. It was a remake of a game I wasn't familiar with and didn't care about, but it came with a small, hardbound booklet of some lore and maps and item descriptions. There was a cloth map. It was fantastic. It was, like... The game itself, I found all the more charming knowing that whatever group of weirdos worked on it, like, wanted to take it to that next level. And, yeah, that's gone. Street Fighter V, what happened to Blanca? Where'd Blanca go? I hear 6 is really good, but I feel like I'm also discouraged from my experiences online to ever play another fighting game for as long as I live. But I hear Street Fighter VI kicks ass, so. Anyway, should we talk about the show, I guess?
I think we are contractually obligated to.
All right. Well, we both had a good time last week. In our little pre-chat before we started, we're not going to have a good time this week, because here's all that happens. From the official, non-official fan wiki summary, we have that Howard has been asked by NASA to throw out the first pitch at a Los Angeles Angels baseball game. But can he? Is it the LA Angels? Were they not Anaheim? They had to go to Anaheim. They talked about being across the street from Disneyland. Anyway.
Yeah, it makes sense, because Angels on the Outfield is the Disney movie about the baseball team.
God, I just don't know.
I think they're basically owned by Disney.
Well, the Disney team, then. And then also, Sheldon, Amy, Penny, and Leonard get into an argument.
Did you ever watch that movie, Angels? I'm going to do that thing where I deliberately non sequitur us.
Oh, the thing that we always try to do as much as possible because we'd rather be talking about anything else in the show we're actually talking about? Yeah, sure, that thing.
This is more of a Mabim Bam aside, but you ever see that movie, Angels in the Outfield? Weird movie.
Not since I was a kid, but I remember it being like a kind of a favorite. So it was, but I think that and Rookie of the Year came out at about the same time.
Yes, they definitely, it was like, what was in the air? And then, like, why in the early 90s were they suddenly trying to get, like, children into baseball again? Because also I remember a kid in King Arthur's Court, which is not a baseball movie, but for some reason begins nonetheless with him playing baseball, and he wears his baseball jersey the entire, like, adventure while he's time traveling into King Arthur times. Like, why was that? Like, were they worried we wouldn't identify with him if we didn't know that he liked baseball?
I
couldn't hit a fastball?
I think after...
Because he hadn't uncovered his heroic nature by time traveling to the Middle Ages yet?
After Clinton got elected, and we've taken as America, the fall from grace that Reagan ascended us into and George H.W. Bush kind of just tried to keep afloat, we had a lost cultural identity as a country. What is a wholesome family movie anymore? The president is blasting an intern with smoking implements in the White House. What does it mean to be a family? Baseball is maybe the last wholesome thing we can hold on to. And so we need two movies. One about a young man who breaks his arm and turns into a superhero. And the other, you know, the more I think about it, Kyle, the more I'm sure I don't think I've seen Angels in the Outfield. Because that was like Christopher Lloyd and other angels, I guess. I mean, that's
yes.
as and American as you could
coach,
get.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think I've only seen trailers for Angels in the Outfield and have seen Rookie of the Year like a dozen times. Only one of those movies has the line Funky Butt Lovin' in it, I can tell you that. It's not the one with the angels in it. We want to talk more about the TV show.
Yeah, just summarize what happens in the episode, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's very straightforward this time, which, for better or worse, Howard, because he is a former, or maybe you're always an astronaut, you know, it's kind of like being an alcoholic. Like, you can go so
I'm
many...
I'm sure if you ask John Glenn, he seems to, or not John Glenn, Buzz Aldrin seems to feel that way.
Yeah, he can go so many days without going to space, but it's all you're ever really thinking about, you know? But anyway, yeah, Wolowitz gets chosen to be the opening pitcher for, you know, throughout the first pitch for this Angels game. And part of the joke is that everyone else had turned it down, but he was the first to say yes, waka waka. And he knows he's going to do badly. But Bernadette is like, hey, I used to play a lot of softball. Let me train you. So she and Raj and Wolowitz all go to train in a gym, the width of which is as wide as the distance he needs to throw it. And I'm like, I guess this works for comedy measurement purposes, but oh, is this going to keep, if he gets any good at it, is he going to keep socking the wall, and that's not going to be good, he's going to cause damage. Ah, I'm worried about this gym. But that's what they do, and it's not a concern at all, because Wolowitz can barely throw. As expected, no surprises there, nothing funny happens. And guess what? He doesn't get better. Bernadette's efforts don't mean anything. Raj isn't even supportive. He's more eager to heckle him, so that certainly doesn't help. And the reveal, I actually thought was kind of cute and nightmarish, which is they eventually get to the big game, and Wolowitz starts going towards the pitcher's mound. He's got a microphone with him, and he's explaining, like, I'm a nerd. I'm a scientist. Of course I can't do this. But guess who can? Oh, it's the Mars Lunar Rover. You're never going to believe it. Not Mars Lunar Rover. Those are two different things. I guess you could go to one of the moons of Mars, but those are where the Doom games take place, so I wouldn't recommend that. I'm pretty sure those are based on documentary footage. But he goes to the pitcher's mound, unveils the Mars Rover, puts the ball in it, and is like, here we go, everybody. But it moves at, like, I don't know, a foot a minute. And so the crowd starts booing him, and he kind of starts pushing back against the crowd. Of course, his own friends are heckling him, because that's how much they love him. And it cuts to black. And I'm like, God, it would be awful if the episode just ended there. What a nightmare. And then it comes back from the commercial break, and it's just more heckling and booing, and then it fades out. It's nuts. It's like...
Thank you. I'm glad it wasn't just me. Like, oh, we're really cutting back to this?
Yeah, and there's no new joke. There's no way out of the scene. Like, they just wanted to emphasize how much everyone hates Wolowitz at the end of the day. Bernadette's not coming in to save him. No one's doing anything. They're just like, we just needed another 30 seconds before credits of more booing. And to me, best part of the episode. It was genuinely unsettling the way they wanted to, like, rub the salt in the wound. And I'm there for it. And that's, I think, I don't know if that's the A plot or the B plot in this one. I'm going to say A plot. It's closer to matching the title. The B plot is even, it's really just Sheldon and Amy went on a date one random night. Let's say it's a Thursday. And then they're like, Sheldon's like, oh, hey, you want to go on another date tonight? And Amy's like, yeah, sure, let's do that. And let's make it a double date with Penny and Leonard. And they're like, oh, that's crazy. Two dates in a weekend. What are you guys, like, trying to catch up on something? And that's where they find out that Sheldon, when he took his little trip on the trains, fell back contractually on the number of dates he was supposed to provide Amy. So he is, in fact, trying to make up for lost time. But Amy informs him that a double date does not actually count for double. Nonetheless, they do have their double date. And here's the thing. Spoiler, nothing funny happens. Instead...
No, you're right. Now that you mention it, not only is the opposite of funny.
Yeah, it's really kind of a bummer, and it doesn't ever really resolve either. It's just as
like
they're
awkward in like the way in which living through this in real life would be awkward. It's not even like jokes aren't good.
Well, and to that extent, it's a success. You know, to the degree that they want you to like be with another couple as they are struggling to figure out whether they're happy with their relationship, and you're just trying to eat your goddamn dinner. They do a great job of that. Because as everyone, before they even leave the apartment building, Sheldon makes some sort of offhand comment about he and Amy being a better couple than Penny and Leonard. They both guffaw, or at least Leonard does. Penny, you know, at least on surface level, tries not to give a shit, even though we learn that she very much gives a shit. And Sheldon explains, oh no, here, there was some researcher whose work has really withstood the last few decades, and he was able to put together this index where you can basically score your relationship, and it will give you a 1 to 10 value of how, like, healthy and sustainable it is. And, hey, me and Amy got an 8.2. We're actually the most healthy couple of the gang. You guys are at the very bottom, falling below even Penny's relationship with Chardonnay, which I think would have been a funnier joke if it weren't actually kind of a bummer. and then Leonard and Penny, like, they don't really think much of it at first, but it starts to dig away. Leonard's curious and wants to prove that they're a better couple. Penny knows that they're not going to do as well. And then that starts kind of being brought out to the sunlight a little further and further. And again, there aren't really any jokes about it. It's at one point she kind of huffs off to get another drink while they're out at dinner, and Leonard chases her down, and she admits that she's scared that they're not going to make it as a married couple and scared of getting married at all. And Leonard says, oh, I'm scared too, but I want to be there with you to go through it. Oh, that's sweet. And then they go back to the table and continue to fight about the relationship healthiness inventory. And they never really do anything with it. Because then they move back to the baseball plot, and that wraps up the episode.
No, I think actually you're just a little... It doesn't really matter.
No, please go.
But just to be clear, what he says the thing about, I know we're both scared, but I want to go through this with you. And I only remember it because it was like one of the only like mildly funny jokes of the episode was Amy goes to Sheldon and goes, see, I do wish, I would be so happy if you said something like that to me. And he goes, oh, honey, we're like a 7 out of 10 on the whatever scale. Trust me, you're happy.
That was good. I'm glad you did shoehorn that in, because that was a nice little interaction and a very good Sheldon line. And on that, let's call the plot wrapped up. Let's talk about anything else about this we might like or dislike. Here's a neutral thing. They make a couple of references to, hey, Wolowitz wouldn't be good at this. The only frame of reference they have for any of their sports ability is playing Quidditch at Griffith Park, and they don't do any jokes about it, though. It's one of those things where
Except
it's like just
how pathetic it is.
Yes, they
only joke.
Penny emphasizes how sad it is to have to see her boyfriend do anything like that, and how she'll never forget. But other than that, it says that they're Harry Potter fans. I can't remember how I felt about it at the time, but like one of the other astronauts tries to give Wolowitz a little pep talk over a video call. And I forgot that Wolowitz's name is Fruit Loops. And I was like, I don't remember being bothered by that and thinking it was kind of homophobic before. But for whatever reason, now it's making me shudder a little bit. I'm not sure what changed. And I don't know. I guess the point of the pep talk was kind of funny, which is, no, you can't win. Either you're going to do a great job and no one's going to care, or you're going to fuck it up and everyone's going to laugh at you forever. So really, you just should have said no to this altogether like everyone before you did. And yeah, you know what? Here's something positive I'll say. I like that Wolowitz ultimately didn't win and didn't have a way out. I wish the end of the episode were less haunting, but the fact that there wasn't like a clever solution ultimately, and that he just kind of had to take his lumps no matter how hard he tried, that to me is like one of those, that's life, buddy, kind of things. I wish there was like a better way of presenting it maybe, but you know, I would have been even less satisfied, I think, if he were suddenly celebrated for his Mars rover solution. You can't have a winner in a comedy show. That's not funny. So I'll give it credit for that. Kyle, give me anything about this.
The opposite. I was like, it would have been kind of cute if he'd figured out how to unembarrass himself with the power of science. But no, I guess you're right. It's like that would be such a profound, like that level of like hope would be really grating and weird in this show of all things. And it would feel kind of like out of left field. Like that time when they all sang the, remember when they all sang the song to Bernadette and how out of left field that felt?
In the hospital?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was crazy. It would be strange to have this weird kind of uplifting moment. But you know what, Kyle? Maybe that's why they should do it, to mix it up a little bit. Because, like I said, I liked that it didn't work out because I worried it'd be too cute if the Rover thing did win. But, you know, something that we both liked about the last episode, especially, like, in a little spoiler thing, was, like, the nerds really got to just kind of shine as nerds and to, like, give each other high fives for being nerds and be like, oh, we're not good at this thing, but we can, you know, we know all the answers out of these random textbooks. Haha, look at us. And, you know, a nerd win every now and then ain't so bad. And then and then instead of, like, the whole crowd booing him for the stinger scene, it could be him just, like, absolutely barbarian railing Bernadette while she wears her angel's uniform. There's not any jokes to that either, but if we're not telling jokes, just we may as well put what I want to see in it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. Anything else?
I don't know, man. Like, you know, I want to pick at the bones, but this one, it's just so flat.
I'm just going to say, they're still doing something weird with Penny. They still haven't figured out what her new vibe is supposed to be.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you said something. I agree.
Like, I don't want to overanalyze it again for the, like, third week in a row, but it's like they've veered away from, like, I get they don't want to do fun quirky airhead anymore, but now they're like, they've like gone all the way over into like borderline alcoholic, like, you know, middle-aged commitment phobe, and it's like, I'm not, let's, yeah, gotta be some mean here, guys.
Well, and they're not following through on like the pharmaceutical angle, which I think would be really interesting.
I assume they'll have to at some point, right? Because where else are they going to go? But you're
God, right. God, who knows? So far. Yeah, it's... And she hasn't been either, like... Yeah, like, the last season, you know, is, like, thin as any sort of, like, connections even within a season are, like, plot-wise. At least she was like, oh, I'm going to pursue my acting career seriously, and we're going to see her... that measured by the progress she's making in Skunked Ape. And that, at least, was fun. It wasn't Skunked Ape, was it? That was something that I wanted to work on. No, it was
Serial Apis.
Oh, God! Maybe I just wanted to make you say it. Yeah, that movie. And now they gave her something new to do, but she's not actually doing it. And so she's just kind of pouting with weird hair. And I think also subliminally ushering in a new age of neoliberalism, but that's something that I'm just going to keep in my back pocket. I don't know. Do you want to talk about things we like? Do you have anything else?
Nope.
Okay. Well, I do have something in the chamber for things to recommend. I can go first unless you would like to.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So I play too many video games, as is obvious. But also, sometimes I get bored of them because I remember that there's more to the world out there. And instead of finding anything to do about it, I just look for the next game that's going to keep me, you know, fully full of enough sensations that I don't want to engage with anybody. And oh, baby, my dream came true. Oh, I can't believe it. I have a Nintendo Switch. I have the Nintendo Switch Online membership thingy, which I was going to cancel a couple weeks ago because I'm like, I'm not really playing these free online games. Like, I feel like Nintendo has really kind of dropped the ball with saying they're going to provide an online library and then giving you, like, maybe one or two just small fry, nobody cares games every other month. And, like, the occasional gem mixed in, but pretty just kind of like meh overall. And then I forgot the deadline before it renewed, and so I got hit with another year, and I was kind of mad about it. But I think maybe just this last week, something that I never thought would happen and has happened is On the Nintendo 64 part of it, they have released Blast Corps, which is one of my all-time favorite games, and I cannot believe it. And they released also a couple other things on there, like Jet Force Gemini, which I've never played and might try finally now. There's a few Rare games, which I guess they must have worked something out with Rare. But Blast Corps, like, it's hard to explain why it's so, like, why it tickles my brain so much. Because it's, like, a really straightforward, dumb game. But I think it's just one of the most fun games I've ever played. It's, like, thematically, it's designed perfectly for, like, 8-year-olds. Because you are part of a demolition crew who is trying to stop a fleet of, like, automated trucks carrying some sort of incredibly delicate radioactive material that the AI in them has fallen out of communication with whatever control, and they haven't turned evil or anything. It's not like that. But their trucks are just now all of them going straight in whatever direction, regardless of what is in their way. And so you, apparently the only solution to this is that you, as part of this insane wrecking crew, have to destroy everything in the truck's way so it doesn't explode in the middle of a city. And what this means is that you are, with Nintendo 64 level polygon graphics, taking really souped up dump trucks, which is the vehicle I hate the most, even though today when I was playing it, I was like, this is the most difficult vehicle to use, but I do like the idea more than I did as a child that its main method of destruction is crushing things with its big, beautiful ass. That's something that, as an adult, I love a lot more. But yeah, like a big dump truck, a big bulldozer, some sort of weird thing that shoots pistons out of its side so you can destroy buildings on either side of you. And then you get some muscle cars, and then you get a couple giant robots, and all you do is smash shit. Like, there's, you're supposed to save survivors? Guess how you do that? You smash the buildings they're in. There's no separate way to achieve that goal other than to keep smashing. There are these little lights you can, like beacons you can highlight, and I guess those are supposed to, like, disperse radiation or whatever. That's your collect-a-thon element. You just have to go around and find all the little dots, basically. But it's a pretty short game. It's just a series of mostly, like, small cityscapes, and you just go around and smash things. And when you've done all that, you know, this is a 30-year-old game or whatever, or 25. Spoiler, there's a secret second part to the game where then I guess you have to start doing it throughout the solar system. And so now you're on the moon and you're on Mars and you're smashing shit in different levels of gravity. And that's a lot of fun. And then
the name of this game?
Blast Corps. And Corps like a regiment, like CORPS. And then after you've done all that, it unlocks, like, and this is where I usually get stuck, like, super hardcore expert mode, where it's like, hey, remember how difficult it was to get all the gold medals? Oh, there's actually a platinum medal level that's been unlocked. Go back and get your perfect times. And that's usually when I tap out, but only after having a great experience, like, just destroying everything. And there's just enough variety to, like, the vehicles and the levels that I don't get bored of it. This isn't a game I'm, like, obsessed with, but this is a game that I started playing again the other night, and 25, 30 years later, I still think is a hoot. And so, yeah, if you have the Nintendo expansion thingy, it's on there, and give it a try, because, yeah, it's one of those things. And it could be a nostalgia thing, I don't want to rule that out, but I just think it's fantastic. And so you should play Blast Corps, an old game for old people. Check it out. Kyle, your turn.
You know, I want to take I have a slightly more recent game recommendation, but I want to take a second just because you reminded me of, it was weird because it's not, I don't think, the same style of game at all, but there are a weird number of similarities. So one of my favorite games for the N64 when it came out was Rampage World Tour, which was the N64 remake of the classic arcade game Rampage, which was based on, like, old giant monster movies where you basically played one of three kaiju, you know, a giant gorilla or a giant lizard, or the weirdest of the three in terms of, like, references, a giant wolf.
Yeah.
And you went around, and every level was a different cityscape that you had to destroy as quickly as possible. Only this was a 2D thing, but you would literally just smash all the buildings, you know, bonus points if you could eat the people inside the buildings, you know, stomp on the military or police who showed up to get in your way, and then on to the next level. And the weirdest thing about that is, it was a really fun game, but there were a lot of levels. And yes, as you progress, eventually you start off by, like, smashing, like, every major, like town and city in the world. And then eventually, yes, you end up on alien planets like the moon, and you're smashing things and, like, you know, alien gravity and stuff like that. So I did not know that was
a part of that game. That's rad.
Yes, if you play it long enough, you end up fighting, like, flying saucers on, like, other planets. So I don't know why, like, I kind of like that they were like, you know, if people want more of this, there's an obvious direction we can take it in. So your game and mine both had that. Speaking Sweet. Of games that are quite good that you can get for very cheap if you have the right system, I've played Prey. I've beat Prey, actually.
Glue gun.
Yes, the 2016 game by Arkane that was named the same name as another game that I think famously only came out like 4 years earlier, of which it had nothing in common. It was neither a spiritual sequel nor made by the same studio nor anything.
Well, do you know why that is? Because I
assumed it was some sort of like marketing executive, like feeling that who owned both names being like, people won't buy games if they don't recognize the name on them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird because, I mean, everything you said is true. And I remember being aware of the old Prey games, playing the new one, waiting for some sort of connection, and then it's just not there. They don't even attempt it. Yeah, they're just like completely different games.
No, that's what's wild about Prey is, frankly, I don't want to oversell it because you have to like a certain type of game to enjoy it. But if you like a certain type of game, it is wild how good it is. And also how, like, it's just, it's weird, I guess, what I'm saying is that, like, people talk about BioShock all the time. People talk about System Shock and Half-Life and, what else? They talk about Dishonored. And this game is literally, I mean, it's made by the people who made Dishonored, and it's quite clearly doing its, like, the entire thing is just a love letter to, like, BioShock and System Shock, to the point that it's clearly Arkane sort of auditioning to make, like, to inherit the title of best, like, sci-fi third-person open-world RPG game. And to that end, it's an incredibly, like, detailed, complicated, like, layered game with a huge amount of interconnected levels and, like, side quests and stuff. And it's just, like, no one talked about it when it came out. And to this day, I don't think, like, that many people ever played it or gave a shit about it. And I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm just saying, like, the amount of work that went into it, it is, like, a huge, incredibly nuanced and pretty well-balanced and well, like, designed game. That to be so good and so under, like, represented or talked about or never mentioned in any best games or best sci-fi games list, it's really strange just, like, how completely forgotten it is.
Yeah, well, I remember seeing, I didn't watch the video, is this, like, a YouTube essay positing that Prey went ignored because it was too good? Like, the idea being that, like, there wasn't anything to complain about. It wasn't, like, insanely brilliant either, though. It was just, like, such a solid game that people were like, huh, pretty good, and moved on.
Yeah, and I think it's like, I watched that essay, too, that's by Yahtzee from former Zero Punctuation, now fully Ramblematic.
But, yeah, their second win, who I have actually started supporting on Patreon, because I want those boys to do well.
That's right. We support the people we want to do well with our financial dollars, hard earned, because we understand that that is an important part of patronage in the 21st century. By the way, Nick's Venmo is still at Hide Thoughts.
It is. Send funny amounts of money, and it'll go towards us somehow. We've already reaped the rewards of our single donator willing to take us up on that.
Yes. It's just like, it's weird. Yeah, it's an incredibly ambitious, well-made game that just nobody really gave a shit about. But you can get it if you're looking to kill some time in an incredibly, like, interesting and immersive video game that you probably didn't play because it doesn't seem like very many people did. You can definitely get it on the PlayStation Store for, like, $12. So, you know, you can benefit from their disgrace, I guess. But anyway, to describe the game, and it has one of the best openings of it. Like, I'm not sure the entire game lives up to the momentum of its opening, but the opening is fantastic. And obviously a lot of thought and work went into it, because at the start of the game, you wake up and you're being told, hey, you've been selected to go on a mission to space. We just need to run some final tests. So you leave your apartment and you go up to the roof and you take a helicopter through the city while the credits play, which is a nice little credit sequence. And then you land on another building and they're like, we just got to run some tests. So you go and you do basically the tutorial is just like them running tests on you. And it's pretty funny too, because it's like, okay, now do your best to crouch and look, do your best to like pick up these objects and move them across the room. And then you do it, and the guy behind the glass is like, turns to his friend, and you just hear him. He's like, it's not just me. That was like really bad, right? Like, he did not do that in an intuitive. He did that like that's the first time in his life he's ever done that. Are we sure this guy's okay? And so there's little jokes like that. And then he goes to pick up a cup of coffee, and it turns into like a spider monster and tries to eat his face. And suddenly it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And gas fills the room, and you get knocked out, and then you wake up back in your apartment, and you're like, oh, that's weird. I guess it was all a dream. It wasn't a dream. And in fact, you're, spoiler alert for a game, again, 10 years old that, or almost 10 years old that nobody played. that entire first sequence was an elaborately engineered simulation. I don't mean a mental simulation. I mean, like, it's like the Truman Show. You break out of that room, you like take a wrench to the window of your own apartment, and you realize that skyline you just saw was being digitally projected on the glass. And they show you how the entire like opening sequence that you just went through for the tutorial was actually like carefully curated so that you wouldn't see the seams, but that you actually weren't going anywhere. It was like a Disneyland ride. And why would someone do that? Well, because actually you've been in the middle of the experiment for quite some time, and part of it was erasing your memory and disguising the fact that you had been part of the experiment. But you're actually on the space station, motherfucker, and it's been taken over by alien monsters that can look like random objects and also look like people that can shoot like fire and energy and stuff. And mm-hmm. So you then have to like weave your way through this entire ship, and you know, there's crafting components, and you know, you can, you know, harvest alien organs to use their powers, and you know, various ethical quandaries around the nature of new technology and bioethics and stuff. And yeah, and at the end, you know, the fundamental question is, well, do you try to like use this alien technology to your advantage, or do you just recognize that, oh no, we've tapped into something we're not ready to use, we have to just blow all this up? And again, it's just pretty good hitting stuff with, you know, you start out hitting stuff with wrenches. By the end, you've got like, you know, laser turrets and, you know, psychic powers, and it's just good. I would recommend it.
Yeah, actually, even you just mentioning it to me, because I have played it, made me want to give it another try. And, you know, I think pretty limited as far as different endings go, but still different endings and a couple different playstyles you can do. And
yeah. Different playstyles. And actually, well, you're right, the endings are not that different, but they both acknowledge, I think, in a like a way that most games don't. They acknowledge the different choices that you make throughout the game in, like, you know, ways where you can actually see how they've impacted it. And even more interestingly, it's just not obvious. It's not like at no point are you like, well, this is the good way to play this game, and this is the bad way to play this game. I mean, there are things that you're aware of are being done on the space station that you're like, oh, well, that's obviously fucked up. And it, you know, probably shouldn't have participated in that as part of this experiment.
Sure.
But you yourself, but it's never like, you know, it's never like it is in BioShock where it's like, how do we feel about sacrificing orphans? Maybe there's a morally justified time to, you know, ritually murder a child.
Well, and then also, in addition to, like, the themes there, I think something that's gone understated, even if I was yelling it at the beginning, is the glue gun is, you know, I'm surprised it didn't get more attention, just like you are, thinking about it, too. Is like, I think it's the coolest physics-based weapon since Half-Life 2's gravity gun, and they don't really put any limits on how you can use it, and so you can totally get around levels in what you might call a traditional way, you know, making sure you're just unlocking doors and going pretty straightforward on the path. But you can also get around just about anything with the glue gun, and it doesn't try to stop you. It anticipates it, if anything.
Yes, that's another, it's, you know, in a way, this is one of my biggest gripes about a lot of games these days. And this definitely, it's like, it gives you a skill tree, and yeah, it's like if you fill out the skill tree in a normal way, then you will gradually get better at everything. That being said, if you want to like pick the three things on this list that will instantly make this game completely broken to play, that's your right. You know, make it so that you can hack all the doors that you're supposed to go spend, like, you can spend half this level going around looking for the passwords, or you can just max out your like hacking ability and just open them. And then, you know, if you go back and discover that other stuff later, cool, that's part of our immersive sim. If not, it's fine. We're not judging you for how you want to play. Or if you want to max out your strength and then just body the door, just rip the door off its hinges with your bare hands, that's also fine.
Yeah, it's a lot of freedom, you know, in a way that games often advertise and they don't actually give you. But yeah, this is one where, again, when you mentioned it the other day, and then the more we talk about it, I'm like, yeah, I got to give it another try. Yeah, pretty fun game.
It's interesting because it's easily my, you know, I think I'm sort of a, I feel like Arkane, the studio, has like just constantly been trying to make games that I would like, but I didn't like. Like, I could never get into the Dishonored games. I really, really wanted to like Deathloop, and I just could not do it. But this was the one, and it's like, I can see why the games that came after it feel worse, because it's like, well, they made a game that was like everything I could ask for and no one played it. So yeah, of course they're making shitty live service games now. What's the point of putting in the effort to make something good if no one's, and original, if no one's going to care?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's based on my very limited number of video game commenters. There seems to be some hope, or at least expectation, that all this live service stuff is going to come crashing down sometime soon. We'll see.
We do seem tired of, like, the new Suicide Squad Justice League game is not having a good time right now. Everybody's like, the universal response seems to be like, oh, really? Are we still making games like this? I thought we all decided we were going to stop this and go back to making games people actually like.
Yeah, we'll see. It's,
Also, my favorite thing I learned about that game, do you know, apparently, does not have an ending.
What?
Yeah, if you play it all the way to the end, they're like, well, the ending is actually coming in a patch, you know, maybe in season 2 or 3 or something like that, but we haven't gotten around to it yet.
That is bullshit. Ugh. And that reminds me, this was complained about, I didn't even play this game, I only know about this from, like, learning about it long after the fact, is a Capcom game. They got a lot of shit when people started putting a lot of DLC in games because they were fans of, I think especially Street Fighter V, maybe it was, or Street Fighter IV, one or the other, had most of the unlockable DLC stuff already on the disc. And so technically you'd already bought all of the DLC, but you had to wait an arbitrary amount of time and pay more money to actually use it. And so that sucked. And with the ending thing, you're saying is, Their game, Asura's Wrath, had some DLC. And that, too, is a situation where to get the actual ending of the game and to not get some sort of, like, you know, question mark, to be continued thing, you had to get the DLC. Like, they didn't give you the full game, and it's ridiculous. And yeah, you telling me that, like, it's, I can't believe they're still doing that, where, you know, you can take so many shortcuts and still have a game that people are going to play, but, like, if you don't even have the entire base experience intact and you're still selling it to people, go fuck yourselves. Old Man Gamer Cranky yells at Cloud, yes.
The people in this industry used to have integrity. What happened?
Yeah. Mario was a family man. He'd sit his kids down to watch Angels in the Outfield and wouldn't do any of this wacky, weird stuff they're doing today where, yeah, you get to play as Harley Quinn, and that's great because there's something about it that just makes you horny. You don't really like talking about it with other people. You just get
they
this feeling.
They used to put so much content in games that they were like, fuck it, you finished all the normal content? That's okay, we got more. Did you expect us to end up playing on the moon? Well, no, but guess what? You get to play on the moon now.
It's so good. Even knowing it's going to happen in Blast Corps, I'm like, man, I can't wait until I blow my own mind and unlock the moon content again.
It's... Yeah, that's like in the old, remember in the old Tony Hawk games, there were all like the normal levels, but then if you played it, it was like you skater heaven, you know, and just like there was always like one crazy level at the end that made no sense. And then you could play as like, you know, in addition to all the normal characters, you could be Darth Maul or whatever. Okay, that was shitty.
I feel so disgustingly old right now, where it's like, remember when games were good? Remember back in the day, they had secret levels and codes and passwords. It was better. Time leads us ever forward to worse and worse consequences. The only thing we can hope for is that our very understanding, our bodies, everything is ultimately just ripped apart by entropy so that none of this has any sort of meaning at all. Play Blast Corps and play Prey.
The one by Studio Arcane that came out in 2016. I don't know. Maybe the other one is also good. But just don't play that expecting the experience I just described.
Or play it and do expect the experience and be like, what is going on with those two? What is happening in my life?
Yeah, that was one of my favorite pranks ever. I can't remember even which video reviewers did it. But they advertised a Let's Play of... I think it was Final Fantasy 15, for April Fools, and then it was just Final Fantasy 5.
Aww.
Or no, pretty... 6. It was definitely 6.
Oh, that's way better.
Because they were, but it was just like, they're marching, like, they're in that initial, like, opening sequence where they're marching through the snow, and they're just refusing to acknowledge that, like, you know, this isn't a game that just came out.
I love it. I love that. Let's end there. Whatever. Na 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 na